Picture this. A courtroom drama hinges entirely on the testimony of a single undercover operative. What safeguards should be in place to ensure a just outcome? Today, we're diving deep into a fascinating Puerto Rico Supreme Court case from the year 2000, Pueblo v. Acevedo Estrada, which grappled with exactly this scenario.
Yeah, what's fascinating here is how this case really shines a light on a fundamental tension within our legal system. You know, the necessity of undercover work in law enforcement versus the paramount importance of protecting an individual's right to a fair trial, what we call due process.
Precisely. In this case, Acevedo Estrada, a court officer, found himself accused of a drug deal. The sole piece of evidence against him, just the word of an undercover agent, Fernando Collazo.
Right.
And here's a crucial detail. This accusation came shortly after Collazo's cover had been, well, compromised at another judicial center, leading to his transfer. Right away, you could see the potential for complications and questions about his reliability.
That transfer immediately raises a critical question, doesn't it? Was it just a routine reassignment, or were there specific circumstances, maybe, that might have influenced Collazo's subsequent actions or even his motivations?
That's a key point the defense definitely explored. For you, especially if you're, like, navigating the intricacies of the legal field, understanding how courts scrutinize testimony that might not be entirely reliable is absolutely vital. This case provides a compelling illustration of that scrutiny in action.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really underscores the judiciary's role as a critical gatekeeper. They have to ensure that trials are conducted fairly and that convictions aren't based on evidence that could be, well, inherently weak or biased.
Exactly. So the central question we're unpacking in this deep dive is this. Under what circumstances is it absolutely essential for a trial court to provide very specific guidance or cautionary instructions to the jury on how they should evaluate the testimony of an undercover agent? Let's delve into the specifics of this case.
Okay, so to truly understand the significance of the Supreme Court's decision, we probably need to first look at just how weak the initial case against Acevedo Estrada was.
Right.
What exactly did the prosecution present?
It was a case built on incredibly shaky ground. The prosecution's entire argument, without exception, rested on the testimony of Fernando Collazo, the undercover agent.
Just his word.
Just his word. And this is a crucial point. There was absolutely no physical evidence linking Acevedo Estrada to the alleged drug transaction. No drugs were found, no money changed hands in view of anyone else, no tangible proof whatsoever to corroborate Collazo's account.
What's fascinating here is the inherent vulnerability of a case built solely on eyewitness testimony, right? Especially when that witness operates in a context where their own credibility or potential biases could easily come into question. A core insight here is that a case built on a single, potentially biased perspective is inherently weak in the eyes of the court.
Precisely. And given this fragile foundation, the defense's strategy was clear.
Mm-hmm.
Attack Collazo's credibility head on.
Makes sense.
They raised questions about his past conduct, highlighted inconsistencies within his testimony, and even suggested the possibility of personal motives that Collazo might have had against Acevedo Estrada. Think about it. If the only thing holding up the prosecution's argument is a witness whose reliability is questionable, the entire case is in jeopardy. This really underscores a fundamental legal principle. Testimony alone, especially when potentially self-serving, requires rigorous scrutiny.
This also highlights the critical importance of robust cross-examination, doesn't it? The defense plays such a vital role in probing the truthfulness and accuracy of the prosecution's claims.
Absolutely. And this brings us to a pivotal moment in the case. The defense actually requested that the trial court give the jury specific instructions on how they should approach and evaluate the testimony of an undercover agent.
Ah, okay.
They wanted the judge to explicitly guide the jury on the particular risks and potential pitfalls associated with this type of evidence.
What's significant here is that the defense recognized the potential for the jury to give undue weight to the testimony of a law enforcement officer, even one operating undercover, without fully considering the inherent complexities and potential for bias that come with that role.
Exactly. But here's where the trial took a turn that ultimately led to the Supreme Court's intervention. The trial court denied this request. They did not provide those specific cautionary instructions to the jury.
Oof. This refusal is really the crux of the legal issue that the Supreme Court had to consider then. Did this denial fundamentally undermine the fairness of the trial, violating Acevedo Estrada's right to due process?
That's the central question, and the Puerto Rico Supreme Court's majority decision was a resounding yes. They ultimately decided to reverse the conviction because the trial court failed to provide those crucial jury instructions.
Okay. The reasoning behind this reversal is incredibly important for understanding the court's perspective on the reliability of uncorroborated undercover testimony. The court recognized that relying solely on such testimony carries inherent risks.
Absolutely. The court's key holding was that uncorroborated undercover testimony is inherently risky and therefore demands really rigorous scrutiny. They went so far as to deem Collazo's testimony fragile, stating that it was only minimally sufficient, at best, to even support a guilty verdict.
That term fragile really underscores the court's deep skepticism about relying solely on this type of evidence, doesn't it? Especially when the witness's own reliability is called into question. The core insight here is that the court recognized the need for the jury to approach such testimony with a heightened sense of caution.
And that's precisely where the defense's efforts to expose Collazo's credibility issues became so significant. They brought up his history of dishonesty, pointed out inconsistencies in his statements. Unfortunately, the specific details from the full case record aren't available to us right now, but you can imagine the defense presented a case demonstrating why Collazo might not be the most trustworthy witness.
Right. They likely highlighted specific instances of prior untruthfulness or contradictions within his testimony during the trial itself. And it's also important to remember that these inherent risks with undercover testimony can include things like memory problems, potential bias stemming from the nature of their work, or even pressure to produce results in their investigations.
Exactly. And get this, the jury's verdict was 9-2 with one abstention.
Wow, close.
That very close split strongly suggests that there were already significant doubts among the jurors. The Supreme Court reasoned that proper instructions on how to critically evaluate Collazo's testimony could very well have swayed one or more of those jurors, potentially changing the entire outcome.
Yeah, that narrow margin really underscores the potential impact that specific jury instructions can have on the deliberative process.
And the court didn't hold back. They articulated a powerful principle stating that convictions must be reversed if serious, reasonable doubts about guilt exist. In their view, the lack of proper jury guidance in this case directly contributed to those serious doubts.
Which really speaks to the fundamental importance of ensuring that juries are equipped with the right tools to critically evaluate the evidence presented to them.
Now, as is often the case in legal decisions, there was another perspective.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the dissenting view.
Ah, the dissent.
One of the judges strongly disagreed, arguing that the trial court's error, if there even was one, was what the law considers harmless error.
Okay.
For you listening, harmless error is a legal concept that even if a mistake happens in court, it's not enough to overturn a verdict if it didn't actually affect the outcome.
Right. The dissenting judge essentially believed that the evidence, even if it was thin, was still sufficient to support the conviction. Their argument was that providing specific jury instructions on undercover testimony wouldn't have changed the outcome given the broader context of the case as they saw it.
This introduces a really critical point of legal debate. The constant balancing act between ensuring that proper legal procedures are followed and respecting the finality of jury verdicts. The dissent likely felt that overturning the conviction based on the lack of specific instructions kind of undermined the jury's role as the ultimate fact finders.
It's a fascinating tension, for sure. Now, it's important to understand that this case didn't actually create a brand new legal test for evaluating undercover testimony.
Good point.
What it did was reinforce existing factors that courts already consider. And these are really valuable for you to understand, especially if you're studying law.
Absolutely. These factors provide a framework for both trial courts and appellate courts to assess the reliability of undercover testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So the court highlighted these key things. First, the level of corroboration of the testimony, was there any independent evidence backing it up?
Crucial.
Second, the undercover agent's credibility and their potential motives. Did they have a reason to lie or exaggerate? Third, the consistency of their testimony with any other evidence that did exist?
Yeah.
Fourth, the plausibility of the events they describe, did it even sound believable? And finally, the necessity of providing jury instructions, especially when the undercover testimony is absolutely central to the prosecution's case, like it was here.
If we connect this back to you, particularly law students, understanding these factors is crucial for analyzing cases involving undercover informants or agents, and for constructing persuasive legal arguments, whether you're arguing for the defense or the prosecution.
Absolutely. This case really strengthens the rights of defendants in cases that heavily rely on undercover agents. It underscores the very important obligation of trial judges to issue cautionary instructions to the jury when the defense requests them, particularly when the credibility of the key witness is under serious question. It really highlights the judiciary's vital role in protecting fair trials from potentially unreliable testimony.
And it's not just about going through a checklist of factors, is it? It's about the underlying principle of ensuring that the jury fully understands the potential pitfalls of relying solely on uncorroborated testimony from individuals who may have their own agendas or whose perception could be skewed by the very nature of their work.
Right. Let's drill down a bit more into why these specific jury instructions on undercover testimony are so important. It's not just legal jargon. These instructions are designed to guide the jury to actively consider the inherent biases or motivations that an undercover agent might have.
Makes sense.
They prompt the jury to think about the fact that there's often a lack of independent corroborating evidence in these situations, and the very real potential for the agent to misremember or even misrepresent events. This, I think, is a key aha moment for understanding the case.
It really forces the jury to move beyond simply accepting the testimony at face value just because it comes from someone involved in law enforcement. It encourages a much more critical and nuanced evaluation of the evidence.
Exactly. And this brings us to a critical distinction: the difference between credibility and corroboration. Courts are particularly wary of uncorroborated testimony, even when it comes from law enforcement.
Very wary.
This case really illustrates that even sworn testimony isn't automatically accepted without serious scrutiny, especially when, as in this case, the witness's reliability and truthfulness are actively being questioned by the defense.
Yeah, the lack of corroboration in this case made Collazo's credibility all the more central and all the more vulnerable to scrutiny. The court recognized that without other supporting evidence, the jury needed explicit guidance on how to approach his potentially flawed account.
So to bring it all together, this deep dive into Pueblo v. Acevedo Estrada truly reveals the critical importance of having strong procedural safeguards in place to ensure a fair trial. This is especially true when the prosecution's entire case hinges on testimony that could be considered inherently fragile.
What's fascinating here is how a seemingly procedural issue, the lack of specific jury instructions, can have such a profound impact on the outcome of a case and the fundamental fairness of the judicial process. It really underscores the delicate balance between prosecutorial needs and the rights of the accused.
Absolutely. This case serves as a really important reminder for future legal practitioners, whether you're aiming to work as a prosecutor or a defense attorney. Always carefully consider and, when it's appropriate, actively request specific jury instructions, particularly when the testimony of undercover agents is a key component of the case.
It really could be crucial.
It could truly be the deciding factor between a finding of guilt and an acquittal.
If we connect this to the bigger picture for you, our listener, especially those of you in law school, it underscores the ongoing need for the legal system to adapt and refine its procedures to address the unique challenges posed by different types of evidence and different investigative techniques. It reinforces the idea that a fair trial isn't just about presenting evidence. It's also about ensuring the jury has the proper tools to evaluate that evidence critically.
And on that note, here's a final thought for you to consider. In an era of increasingly sophisticated undercover operations, how do legal systems continue to adapt to ensure that justice isn't solely based on the unverified accounts of those operating in the shadows?
Good question.
This case from the year 2000 raises enduring questions about trust, about evidence, and about the delicate but crucial balance of power within the courtroom. Something to really think about as you continue your legal journey.